Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Rich Palatsky, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fishing lakes with damsels and dragons. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Rich a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them on the show as possible tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of the show cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Rich Palatsky about fishing lakes with damsels and dragons. Our approach is simple. Education. Fly Fusion is unique when it comes to fly fishing magazines. It is one of only a few magazines in North America that focuses on instruction and education. In Fly Fusion, we've covered subjects like shortline nymphing, tactics for tough days, stillwater fly patterns, dry fly fishing for fussy trout, and a host of other interesting educational topics. Visit our website today at www.flyfusionmag.com. That's www.flyfusionmag.com. And start your subscription to Fly Fusion today so that you can learn all you need to know about fly fishing. Well, before we introduce Rich, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. And for our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, also a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, right there under Rich's section, and askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Rich's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Just click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a dozen of Rich's flies, 6 adult damsels and 6 adult dragonflies. So we want to thank Rich for offering those up tonight. And to win those, you must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. So you have to pay attention, and the question will be about something we talked about during the show, and then you can submit your answer in that same text box on our homepage where you'll be submitting questions during the show. That's where you will also submit your answer at the end of the show. So listen closely. We'll give you some more instructions at the end of the show, but pay attention. You might get those dozen flies. Our guest tonight is Rich Palatsky. Rich lives in Littleton, Colorado with his wife, Cheryl, and his black lab mix, Ebony. He was born in Montreal, Canada, and grew up in upstate New York, and he has lived in Colorado for over 25 years. He has been fly tying and fly fishing for over 30 years and has specialized for the last 15 years in tying flies for and fishing high mountain lakes in Colorado. He does many fly tying demonstrations at events like the Fly Fishing Show, the International Sportsman's Expo, Black Canyon Fly Fishing Show, Western Colorado Fly Fishing Expo, and at fly tying clinics at many Denver area fly shops and TU chapters. He's a life member of both Trout Unlimited and the Federation of Fly Fishers. He's a member of the Cutthroat Chapter of Trout Unlimited and a past member of the Board of Directors for Colorado Trout Unlimited. His flies have been exhibited at the Boulder Art Museum and the Pritchard Art Museum in Idaho Falls. He's currently on the pro staff of Regal Engineering and Wasatch Angling. His biggest influence in fly tying have been Gary LaFontaine, John Betts, Craig Matthews, and Al McKay. What he likes best about fly tying is the creative aspect. He likes to search out little-known materials to create new patterns. Rich, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, hi, Roger. It's great to be here.
Well, it's another beautiful day in Colorado, right?
Actually,
fishing weather.
Today was very, very nice. I'm still waiting for my favorite lakes, which are around 8,000 to 9,000 feet, to thaw out. There's still several feet of ice on most of the lakes at that altitude. and it'll still be at least a week before the ice clears.
That's true. That's true. That's why you have to go east, I guess, out there for wipers right now or something like that. But we're going to talk about lake fishing tonight and specifically talking with Rich because he's done a lot of work with damsels and dragonflies, and he's also created some great patterns that we're going to talk about tonight and look at. And I want to tell everybody right up front that on our homepage, there is a link there to Rich's speaker page. It's where it says more about Rich Pilatsky. If you go to his speaker's page, you'll find some links there that we'll probably be referring to later in the call, and things like his materials list, some other photographs of dragonflies and damsels, and where you can get these cutters that he's going to tell you about, too, for bodies and so forth. So I just want to let you know now that that's where you, so you can find it, maybe bring it up in another window on your computer. Okay, well, Rich, let's start out talking about the damsels and dragons. And the first question we have up here is from some old curmudgeon up in Belgrade, Montana, named Don Bishop. And he used to host the show with me. And I don't understand his question really here. It sounds like maybe a lack of fishing skills. But let me read his question to you. Now, Rich, do you really expect people to believe that fish eat damsels when I've never been able to catch any on one? I was told last night that at least in Montana, the trout can be pretty picky on them. Do you agree?
No, I don't. actually, well... For the last 3 years, this year will be the fourth year I've tied at the FFF Conclave in Montana. Last year it was in Livingston, the year before it was in Bozeman, the year before that it was in Livingston, and this coming year it'll be in Whitefish, Montana. And I've tied adult damsels and dragons at this event every time that I've attended it. And people have taken the damsels, for instance, and they fished Georgetown Lake with a lot of success. They came back, actually the first year I tied damsels, they came in and you can purchase flies at the FFF for a contribution to the organization. And they came back the next year and wanted more because they were killing fish at Georgetown Lake with that pattern on an adult damsel. So,
Are you talking Georgetown Lake in Colorado or in Montana?
No, Georgetown Lake in Montana. It's near Helena. It's it's considered one of the finest lake fisheries in the entire Rocky Mountain region.
So pretty much we figured out here it's Don's fishing skills that are probably lacking
but... You know, commonly.
I'm just trying to give him a hard time. I hope he's listening. So, Don, pay attention because Rich is going to teach us all something, I'm sure, tonight.
Well, one point that comes up a lot of times when people, you know, I'll sit and tie flies at a lot of events and people will come up and look at it and they'll say, I'll ask them, you know, have you ever fished one of these? And most people say no.
Yeah.
You know, not many people fish an adult damsel or an adult dragonfly. It's very rare. But, you know, the thing is, for the last 3 years specifically, I've fished adult damsels and dragons. I have specific windows in the season that I like to fish. And probably in the past 3 years, I've landed probably over 300 trout on damsels or dragonfly adults.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe 60, 70 bass and bluegills. So
That brings up the next question here, which is from Greg in Rapid City, South Dakota. He says, I've pumped stomachs of largemouth bass that have had up to 40 damsel flies in them, but have never found a dragonfly remnant. Are the dragonflies harder to catch compared to the damsel? Is there a difference between these two in availability and or preference with the trout or
well, bass? I'd tell Greg immediately that you can't pump a dragonfly. It's too big to fit in a stomach pump. The only way you're going to find a dragonfly in a fish's stomach is if he either spits it up while you have him up or if you kill him and autopsy and look at the stomach contents. Because a dragonfly, you know, the adult is 3 inches long and it's too big to get into the front end of it is too big to get into a stomach pump.
So he's probably just getting, like you said.
He's getting the damsels. Damsels can fit in there. I've pumped damsels.
Oh, okay.
You can't pump a dragon. Now, you know, something big, too, like a minnow in a fish's in a trout stomach, you can never pump.
Yeah, you're not going to get,
Because
well,
it's too big
going
to fish
back,
to pump.
It does raise a question, though, of not being familiar with these two insects. Is one more prevalent or one more preferred by fish, or you know, whether it be bass or trout?
I think they like whatever they can find. They'll eat either one. You know, the thing is that the one may be more common because of the preferred habitat in a specific water.
Right.
And, you know, the thing that I always tell people to do is when you approach a lake, open your eyes and look. Sit there for 10 minutes and observe. You know, you may see flying ants, for instance. In that case, you put on an ant. You may see dragonflies flying along the side of a lake, along the reeds, because they feed on small midges and mosquitoes. Actually, dragonflies and damsels both are hell on wheels on mosquitoes. They eat millions of mosquitoes. They will catch them in midair. They form a little basket with their legs, and they simply scoop them right up and fly right over them.
And, need a couple of those as pets to keep around me when you're fishing,
yeah.
Right?
But, you know, the thing is that I always observe, you know, if there aren't damsels and dragons around, I usually don't fish them. Now, and there are a few occasions I'll go away from that. The first of the season is one that I will go away from that. I don't see a lot of dragonflies early, for instance, but I know the dates that I can fish them. And the fish certainly have responded because I've caught them. But most of the time, you're going to fish what you see at the water that you're trying to catch something on. Now, the thing is, you also want to look at the color. Dragonflies are extremely varied in color. They can be black, green, red, yellow, purple, all different combinations. They can have black wings. Now, damsels, at least here in the North American area, Rocky Mountains, mostly are kind of a turquoise blue. There are a few different colors. There are some tan ones, some light olive. There are some red ones in the American ruby spot. But I'd say 95% of all your damsels in the Rocky Mountains are turquoise blue. And the common name for them is bluettes.
Okay. Well, we have a couple, actually two questions from the same person, Ed Houdano, that just came in over the Internet, and he's in Byfield,
okay.
Massachusetts. He says, what's the difference between a damsel and a dragonfly, and is there differences between the insects from west to east coast? Good questions.
Okay, difference, they're different genus and species, they're different families, you know, they're different animals entirely. Damsels are Zygoptera, the dragonflies are Anisoptera, and they're both members of Odonata. Now, size is the main difference between them. A damsel is anywhere between an inch and a quarter to an inch and a half maximum size. So the flies that you'll imitate that with, for instance, I tie on a size 12 hook. The dragonfly, the adult dragonfly, you know, and the damsel's wingspan might be inch and a half and inch three quarters. There are spread wing and downwing types of damsels. They have a spread wing group and downwing. But a spread wing...
Yeah, I was going to say, I was reading, I think, earlier today that something that said that the dragonfly's wings go straight out, but the
There's one group of damsels that they're called the spread wings that have wings like a dragonfly. So you can't say, most of the damsels have downwings. They fold down along the body when they're at rest. But there are spread wing damsels. So you can't take it as a generality. Now, the dragonflies are generally 3 inches long, maybe, or a little bit longer. They can be up to 5 inches across the wings, so they're a lot bigger. I typically tie those on a Both of these patterns for adults, I tie on a 2X long nymph hook, a Dairiki 730, and I tie an 8 typically for the dragon, and a 12 for the damsel.
Okay.
But they're different animals. They're, you know, closely related, but they're different.
What about the life cycle of these? And if you need to talk about them separately, that's fine. Or do they both have
the life cycle? Is different. The damsels are anywhere from 1 to 2 year life cycle. So they'll spend 1 to 2 years as a nymph. Now they don't have the stages that a lot of the other aquatic insects have. The larva, the pupa, they don't have that. They spend their entire 1 or 2 years as a nymph. They'll go through several instars or molts. They'll shed their exoskeleton and molt, and then harden, and they get bigger that way. Now, the dragonflies live generally 4 to 5 years, and they get a lot bigger, the dragonfly nymphs. I've seen dragonfly nymphs, for instance, at the Fly Fishing Museum, the FFF Fly Fishing Museum in Livingston, that are 4 inches long. And 3 is not unusual at all. 4 is exceptionally big. 3 is not unusual. You know, a full-grown 4 or 5 year dragonfly nymph, I'll fish. In fact, as soon as the lakes thaw out here in Colorado, one of the first things that I fish is a dragonfly nymph. And I'll fish a size 4. And that's to imitate those full-grown individuals that are going to be hatching this year.
Okay. Okay. Now, you said they were a bit bigger in prehistoric times, right?
Well, that's interesting. Both damsels and dragons have a very, very long history, and I really have to appreciate these critters because they are real survivors. They both go back to the Carboniferous, specifically the Mississippian era, and that's about 300 million years. What's interesting is that these things have survived things like the dinosaurs, a lot of animals that have gone extinct over that period. Back in the Carboniferous, the wingspan of dragonflies was anywhere from 18 inches to 3 feet. And there's actually fossilized dragonflies, adult dragonflies. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of places that have them. The Solenhofen limestone in Germany has dragonflies. There's another area, I think the fluorescent fossil beds have dragonflies too.
Oh, here in Colorado?
In Colorado, yeah. But
yeah.
Pardon?
I was going to say I'm glad they evolved into a smaller size. I don't want anything 18 inches flying around my head up the lake.
The thing is, too, that the nymphs, for instance, the dragonfly nymphs and the damsel nymphs are very, very voracious carnivores. They're omnivores. They'll eat anything smaller than they are, and sometimes something the same size. Dragonfly nymphs, for instance, eat minnows. Very commonly. They can grab their jaws onto one, they'll eat them.
Wow. Wow.
Small minnows, there's dinner right there.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I would have never
thought that. They're definitely the bad boys of the ponds and lakes and rivers. They inhabit all three.
Probably buddies with the praying mantis, right?
Well, the praying mantis doesn't go in the water, so...
As far as...
the aquatic equivalent...
Vicious.
Yeah, of the praying mantis. So, you know, it's a very strong predator in the aquatic environment.
Yeah. Well, good. Let's take our first break here for just a minute. When we come back, we'll be talking with Rich more about damsels and dragons.
Okay.
Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They also provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. And I'd like to just add a little bit to Royal Gorge. The caddis fly hatch is going to be coming on strong. I just saw Bill Edrington's newsletter this morning, in fact, talking about the caddis fly hatch coming in the next week or two. So if you've never fished that, you might want to consider that on the Arkansas River in Colorado. It's a incredible hatch that clouds of caddis that get in your eyes, ears, and everywhere else. And Don Bishop, who we were razzing earlier, and I fished it a couple years ago and just had a blast. So, and I'll probably send out an email tomorrow with the archive show of that we did back then, and you'll learn a lot about that. So just as an aside, it's a great fishing experience that you don't get anywhere else in the world, I don't think. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rich Platsky about fishing lakes with damsels and dragons. And if you'd like to ask Rich a question, just go to our homepage, use that Q&A text box, send us your question, and we'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them on the show as possible. And we really do appreciate you people sending in those questions. Let's see what we got here coming in, Rich. Interesting question. Ed in Bayfield, Massachusetts, will damsels and dragons come off in a hatch at the same time on a body of water? Are they distinctly different in the water conditions or times that they might emerge?
Well, I can speak to that primarily for the Rocky Mountain region. Now, I keep tabs on several lakes that are around 9,000 to 9,200 feet. They're in South Park in Colorado. And what we get there is we get the dragonflies coming off first. Dragonflies will be coming off of the lakes that I watch around the 15th to 20th of May. The damsels don't start until probably the first week of June. So there is a time lag between there. Now, the thing is that during the season, not all of your damsels are going to hatch at once and all of your dragons are going to hatch at once. So once you hit, that first week of June, you can get them both hatching in the same water at the same time. Now, if you're there before the damsels start coming, you'll just get dragons.
Is Bob Carter in Michigan, Commerce Township, it looks like. Does what you do on the high mountain lakes refer to, like, eastern Michigan lakes as well? Do you think that there's a similar strategy and insect life in those lakes as well?
I would expect it to be very similar other than timing.
Right.
Damsels and dragons are going to be living in weedy alkaline lakes. Alkaline and weedy are pretty much synonymous with the type of environment that they like. Alkaline lakes support very luscious weed growth, and most of the damsels and a lot of the dragons like the weeds. If you get a lot of high elevation lakes don't have damsels or dragons because they don't have a lot of weed. And when you get over tree line, typically, you'll get lakes that are a little bit more acidic, typically, because you have a lot of crystalline rock, which causes a low pH usually, and you just don't get a lot of weeds.
Mm-hmm.
But I would think that, I've got a good friend in Michigan that I've got pictures of the dragonflies from Michigan and damsels, and a lot of the habitats are similar to what we have here. There's actually a lot of stream habitat in Michigan, too, that supports dragonflies, especially, and damsels. But I would expect the lakes in Michigan to be similar other than the difference in elevation.
Now, that was one of the next questions I was going to ask you about streams and rivers. So they do...
They inhabit both.
They do, okay.
Yeah, in fact, I was looking up... I have a book on the stream insects of Colorado, and there's one... family of dragonflies that are adapted specifically to freestone rivers,
okay.
Moving water.
Okay.
Now, things like spring creeks are generally alkaline and weedy. A lot of spring creeks and slow, weedy rivers like the Henry's Fork in Idaho, the Firehole River in Yellowstone Park. This is ideal damsel and dragon habitat, and people fish damsels and dragons there on those rivers.
Okay. Okay.
The Missouri River up at Helena is very similar.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is there a better time of day for fishing the damsels or dragons? Or, again, you may have to separate them for us, but...
Daylight is usually better. It's a little hard fishing them in the dark. No, what I generally do is when the air warms up, what these insects seem to do, at least the times I've been out, is until the sun comes out and the air warms a little bit, when it's chilly in the morning, they aren't very active.
Okay.
So I wait until I actually see them flying, usually before I fish.
Have a nice breakfast and
Banker's hours for this. It's and it's the same. I don't fish at dark because they aren't out.
Okay.
They've already gone to bed.
All right.
But you know, it's best hours are 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
1 o'clock.
Got another question here on the internet. Michael Myers in Amarillo, Texas, wants to know if sunny days versus cloudy days make a difference, or any kind of inclement weather, does that affect the hatch or emergence?
The emergence is going to go no matter what. I can remember, it's not the same thing, but I've been out fishing Calabatus mayflies on lakes in snow. Snow flurries, and the Calabatus are just hatching like crazy. When the time is there, they're going to hatch. Typically, it's, in our mountains here, you can get snow in June. Not unusual. If that was the case and the damsels were hatching, they'd still be hatching. They'd be slowed up somewhat, and actually the fish would have a heyday because the damsels and the dragons both, when they hatch, have to dry their wings. And if it's colder and cloudy, it takes longer for them to dry their wings. And the whole time that they're waiting for their wings to dry, they're vulnerable. If they get blown in the water, they're dead meat. Those fish will suck them right up. Once they land in the water, they're never going to fly off. They're gone. They're bait at that point.
Do you find that the trout hit those hard, like, the cicada hatches up in Utah and so forth, where they just think it's, a gourmet dinner happening? I mean, is that the kind of take they have on the adults?
It varies. At times you can sit actually in waters that are inhabited by damsels and dragons. And this is especially prevalent when they're laying eggs. A lot of times they'll fly in mated pairs or even as singles, and they'll skip across the water laying eggs. Every time they touch the water, they shoot a few eggs into the water. That's how they lay their eggs. Now, at times like that, the fish will, I've seen rainbows especially, and bass. They'll jump 3 feet out of the water trying to knock those flyers down. Now, most of the time, the takes are very gentle. They aren't hard at all. It's almost like they take a midge. Now, the one thing is that the take on a damsel, at least, and I'm not really sure about the dragonfly, but I know on a damsel, I can pretty much tell by now the sound of a fish and the look of the rise, because they almost seem to roll like a carp. I've actually sat on lakes a couple of times. I know I was on Delaney Buttes up near Walden in Colorado 2 years ago, and I was out with a fishing buddy. We were fishing the Calabatus mayfly hatch, and I heard a fish rising maybe 100, 150 feet away, and I told my fishing partner, Dan Wright, that fish is taking adult damsels. He said, "Nah, you're crazy." I said, "It's taking adult damsels." I put on an adult damsel. I went over, got within casting distance, made one cast, caught a 19-inch Snake River cutthroat, and waited. Didn't see another fish rise. I went back to fishing Calabatus. But I can actually, I think, at least tell by the sound of the fish's rise, whether they're taking adult damsels.
All right, we've got another question came in from Bob Todd, Frazeesburg, Ohio. He said, I fished, and this probably has to do with the timing and so forth, too, you were talking about. Maybe you can expand on this a bit. Fished a very high mountain lake in Idaho and didn't see any damsels or dragons. Then when I dropped to a lower elevation, there were a lot of them. Does this have to do with altitude?
I don't think altitude as much as habitat. Again, weeds. If you don't have a lot of weeds, you are not going to have a lot of damsels and dragons.
Some of those 10,000-foot lakes that are pretty barren of weeds won't have these then. I mean,
yeah.
You know, those timberline lakes that we have here?
A lot of timberline lakes just aren't going to have them because they don't have weeds. They don't have the proper habitat. Now, there are burrowing dragonflies. You may have some of those, but the prime habitat is weeds. And if you don't have a lot of weeds, in my case, I wouldn't waste my time because I'm looking for places where my chances of success for fishing these flies is good. And if I don't see a lot of dragons and damsels, I usually don't fish them because I don't think they're around.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's see here. We've got a question here. Let's see. Dave in Ketchikan, Alaska. We have dragonflies in southeast Alaska in high mountain lakes. Not too weedy. You were talking about the colors of dragons. Are the colors of the waterborne insects the same as the flying ones?
No.
Will a green pupa hatch into a green dragonfly?
Not in all cases. You can have a green nymph and it'll be a red dragonfly.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, the thing is that the nymph is going to be the color of whatever it's living in. It'll be brown, it'll be olive, it'll be olive brown. Ones that live in the substrate, for instance, that are burrowers, will be the color of the substrate. If they're in sand, they'll be light brown.
Oh, just camouflaged.
Camouflage, yeah. That's just the same with the damsels. Damsels do live in weeds. And a real good way to tell whether your nymph is the right color, for instance, wet your fly and hold it up against the weeds. If it matches, bingo.
That's what you want, huh?
That's what you want. Now, the dragonflies are different. Some of them live in woody debris. Some of them live, like I said, burrowing. And there's a whole family, the Aeshnidae, that are commonly known as green darners, that live in weeds.
Okay.
Actually, I can remember growing up, when you introduced me in the bio, I grew up in upstate New York, and we fished Lake Champlain, for instance, a huge lake, 100-mile lake in New York. We used to use dragonflies as bait. They sold them in the bait shops, and they were the Aeshnidae, the green darners. They call them perch bugs.
Hmm.
And you can use them as live bait.
Hmm. Interesting.
And they're, two and a half inches long at least.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we've got a question came in from George in Boise, Idaho. How long do the damselflies and dragonflies live after hatching? You did mention their lifespan in the water as nymphs, but how long after?
Yeah.
And what about after they lay eggs? Do they then die, or what's the situation there?
Well, typically they can live several months. They can live quite a long time. Once they die, and actually this is interesting too, because once they do lay eggs, they'll shortly die. They don't die right away. They're not like mayflies. They live one day, lay their eggs, and they're gone. Especially the end of the season, for instance, in my mountain lakes. This past year, I caught fish on October 9th, which is very, very late in the season, on dragonflies, on blue dragonflies. There were still dragonflies flying at that time. They hadn't been killed. Typically, what kills off the dragonflies at elevation like that is the frost. The frost will kill them. They'll shelter essentially in weeds and vegetation. But once they get a good hard frost in a lot of areas, that's it for the damsels and dragons. Now, at the time that I was fishing that, for instance, the damsels had all gone. They'd been killed off. The dragons are a little hardier, and they were still around and flying, and I took several fish. That's the latest I've ever taken a fish on a dragonfly.
Wow, yeah, that is pretty late. Now, because usually you've had some kind of hard freeze in there somewhere.
Yeah, but the dragons and damsels both will live quite a long time.
Yeah.
It's not just hours and days, and it's weeks and months.
Well, we know that we've got damsels and dragons all over the United States, and now we know Alaska as well.
Well, I've seen dragons up in Alaska. In fact, in Ketchikan and Anchorage, all over Alaska.
What about other countries of the world? I assume that they're pretty much all over, huh?
It was real interesting. I played Google it before I got online here, and I Googled Gomphidae and Aeshnidae, the two main families of dragonflies, for instance. And my second hit on Gonfiti was a whole site in Australia.
Okay.
Detailing these. I found sites in Japan. I found one listing all of the dragonfly occurrences in Europe. Let's see what else. There was one in Polish. There's another one. I couldn't tell if it was Greek or Russian. It was in a Cyrillic alphabet.
But the Latin's always the same.
There's another one from South Africa.
Okay.
I think pretty much if you've got weeds and water, you're going to have damsels and dragons.
Yeah, yeah.
Alkaline, weedy water.
One more question about locations, then we'll move on to flies and tying patterns here. But one of the questions came in, do you have any favorite lakes for damsels and dragons that you fish in Colorado?
There's a ton of them.
That you want to share. that you want to share.
Well, places I've fished, all over South Park. Antero is very good. Spinney is very good. The lakes that I fish are actually within sight of Antero. North Park, the three Delaney Buttes lakes, the Hohenholz lakes up near the Wyoming border, the Laramie Plains lakes in Wyoming, Diamond, Meebauer, Hattie, several of the other lakes around them too in the Laramie Plains area are all excellent damsel and dragonfly habitat. Terryall Reservoir in South Park is another one, 11 Mile Reservoir in South Park.
Okay, so any lake with weeds. And is alkaline, and they're going to be there.
Alkaline, weedy water. The damsels and dragons are going to load up their suitcases and move right in. Actually, 11 Mile Reservoir, right on the mouth, I was talking with Barry Reynolds, actually, about this, and he's caught carp on damsels.
I would expect so on the nymphs. Huh? Or are you talking about the adults?
On adults.
On adults? Huh?
On adults.
Well, of course, they do come up and hit those cottonwood seed, too, so
they'll probably take
anything.
They'll take anything, especially, and actually grass carp will eat anything. I've caught them on minnow imitations.
Yeah. Well, we need to take another break, but when we return, Rich will be answering more of your questions about fishing these incredible flies. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 25 years with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier fly shop by logging onto their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rich Palatsky about fishing lakes with damsels and dragons. If you'd like to ask Rich a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Now, folks, I do have some other questions here we'll get to that came in online. Keep them coming. I'm kind of holding some of them until we get later in the show. We're going to talk about tying next, and then we'll talk about some presentation and strategies for fishing them and presentation techniques. So hang with us. We've got lots more to talk about. Okay, Rich, let's see.
Roger?
Yes.
One thing I would mention, you must have been reading my mind with that last commercial break, because Front Range Anglers has my damsel and dragon patterns up on their website.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Yes, they
do. There you go. Yeah, if you don't win tonight.
Yeah, Larry Juergens photographed them, and I gave him the materials list for it.
Oh, okay.
And they're both up on the Front Range Anglers website. I've tied up the shop there. And
Yeah, right. Good. Let's see. We've got a couple. Okay, I think we talked about this. Ted in Nashville, Tennessee, want to know about using them for largemouth bass. I think we kind of, that one question, I think they work rather well for largemouth bass, correct?
Especially dragonflies. I've had people, in fact, other fly tiers, I tie them for them at some of these fly tying shows. I've got one friend that can't get enough red dragonflies because he fishes them for bass in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bass and bluegills. Bluegills love damsels and dragons both. the dragon may be a little big for the bluegills to get in their mouth, but bluegills are kind of the Joe Sixpack of the warm water world. They'll eat anything.
Yeah. We've got two questions came in. I'm going to kind of combine them. Rod down in Amarillo, Texas, wanted to know about whether the nymphs change color during the day as the light changes, I guess. And then there's Jim in Nampa, Idaho, wants to know, is it true that damsels change their colors as their surrounding vegetation ages, going from greens to browns as the season progresses? So both talking about color changes.
I don't know of any color change on a diurnal basis, a daily basis. Now, what they do have is a freshly molted dragonfly, for instance, is usually very chartreuse and then darkens up as it hardens its exoskeleton after molting. Actually, what I do at a certain time of the year, I have a fishing strategy, and I use chartreuse woolly buggers and fished them on a sinking line off the shore. And I've had days when the fish absolutely wouldn't leave them alone. Every fish in the lake was, it seemed like, was lined up waiting for something green coming up the slope break to emerge. And this was specifically, I'm almost certain, a dragonfly emergence. Because when the dragonflies emerge, the dragonflies are a little different than damsels. The dragonflies will actually swim to the shore and crawl out. I actually caught, I think in about 1979 in Minnesota, a dragonfly emergence. I was at Minnesota is known as the land of 10,000 lakes. I was at a lake at a resort, and I was working actually as a geologist at the time. But we walked up, and the lawn in front of the lake was covered with adult dragons drying their wings. And all of their nymph cases were sitting on the lawn. And there must have been 100 birds there eating dragonflies. Because the dragonflies, once they hatch and go off flying, aren't very available to birds, for instance. They can't get them. They can get them when they are emerging and drying their wings. And other than when they hatch and when they're laying eggs, the fish can't really get a lot of the dragons either. The window for dragons is a lot less than the damsels. The damsels hang around the water all the time.
Yeah, They'll
swarm around the edges of lakes. A lot of them are in mated pairs. They'll be laying eggs. There's a lot more of them. They're a lot more numerous. The dragonflies are a little more solitary. Dragonfly and damsel, especially adult fishing, is a very rewarding kind of fishing because it's sight fishing.
Yeah.
A lot of the
time. Let's get to that in a minute. Let's talk about flies themselves now. We have a question from Gert Michaels in Belgium, and he wants to know what your top patterns are for damsels and dragons. I expect your top patterns are your patterns, right?
Well, my are obviously my patterns. My top adult patterns are my adult damsel and my adult dragonfly. They're both foam-bodied. And I use macrame yarn for the wings, brushed out macrame yarn.
Well, let's, before we go any further with that, folks, again, just in case you joined us a little later, if you go to Rich's speakers page, and you can get that from our homepage where it says more about Rich Pilatsky, click on that link, go to speakers page, you can see pictures of Rich's patterns there, and then also there is a link there for the material list that Rich is beginning to go through now. So, yeah, why don't you walk us through your materials, Rich, and then tell us how you tie these. I assume they're similar in the tying.
Yeah, that's very similar in tying. Okay. Both of these patterns are tied on a 2X long nymph hook, and people often ask me why I use that. And it's essentially because on a pattern like that, we'll put the strongest piece of iron that you can float. And with a foam body, you can pretty much float anything. So I put a big, strong nymph hook, a 2X long nymph hook that you'd use for a woolly bugger or something. And that's what I tie them on. It's a long shank. But both of the patterns use plastic bead chain eyes. That's the first tie-in point. You'll tie in the plastic bead chain eyes, 2 millimeter bead chain for the damsel, and 5 millimeter for the dragonfly.
And, are those and remember plastic, that then?
They're plastic bead chain, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So they don't have any weight to them, which is good. You want them to float.
Yeah.
I can use different colors, too, on the eyes. They come in different colors. A lot of the damsel eyes, or dragonfly eyes, for instance, are brightly colored. And actually, I've got blue and red. In addition to black, I've got black. Black is the basic color in both. But you can do blue, red, and green, and a bunch of different colors in them. I don't think it really matters, because when you think of it, most of the time, these fish are looking at these bugs. They're looking up against the sun, and they're going to be silhouetted.
Well, that's what they had a question from Ringo in Seattle, and he says he sees them, you know, eyes on damsels and dragon patterns all the time, and he's wondering if they really are that important or just give us, you know, more confidence.
Well, if you look at the actual nymphs and the adults, the eyes are very, very prominent. And
okay.
I don't think, you know, whether on a nymph, for instance, a lot of people fish nymphs without eyes. Now, the thing is that if you can, what I always consider is that if you can make it look more like the real insect, your chances will be better. And that's what I predicate my patterns on. I put eyes on everything in damsel and dragon nymphs and damsel and dragon adults, because they're a very prominent feature on that insect.
Okay, okay. Okay, so, and then go ahead through your materials list here.
Okay, we've started with the eyes. Now, thread, you're going to usually use color to match the body. So on a typical turquoise blue damsel, I use blue thread, which is actually kind of hard to find at times. A red dragonfly, I'll use red thread or orange thread, something to color coordinate. And after putting on the eyes, for instance, on a damsel, I use blue, baby blue, turquoise blue macrame yarn that I tie in along the shank, front to back, and then wrap three wraps down the shank and tie off up right behind the eyes where I'm going to tie in the wings. And this makes a nice little rounded body. It looks like a beautifully dubbed body, but it's not dubbed. It's just one strand of macrame yarn.
Okay.
And at that point, I'll take the wing material, which is white macrame yarn, same stuff that they make plant hangers out of. You can get it in craft stores. And I use a little tool that's essentially a popsicle stick with Velcro on the end of it to brush that wing out, because the macrame yarn has a memory. It's curled because it's in a coiled rope when you buy it. So you have to unwind it, and you take that tool and straighten out the memory out of that macrame yarn to make it straight. And then you'll tie it in, just figure eight it in, right behind the eyes on the adult damsel. The next step that you'll do, what we should mention is that previous to all of these steps, you've punched out bodies out of 2 millimeter craft foam, stuff you get from Hobby Lobby. And there is a punch available. We'll mention the site where it's available. In fact,
we've got a link on your page for that.
So. We've got a link on the page. It's River Road Creations in Stevensville, Montana. Tony Thompson and his wife, Kathy, I've done a lot of business with them. And my cutter that I'm using right now for damsels, I've cut about 4,000 bodies with. And
get your money's worth.
It's still going strong. So. And they actually have my picture of my fly and a couple of pictures of fish and a picture of me tying on the web page for the damsel and dragonfly cutters.
Right.
So that's the place that you get them. But you simply punch out the body, and you take a permanent magic marker and put lines down the length of the body, and it'll be, you know, damsel-shaped. It's got a broad end and a narrow tail, and you want essentially striping down that tail, just like it is on the dragons and the damsels as adults.
Does that band striping go all the way around?
All the way around, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And about how far apart are those bands?
Typically, I'll put four bands on the Damsel and five on the Dragon. So
okay.
It's the, you have to look at the length of the tail,
right,
and divide it into five equal sections or four equal sections, and that's okay. How far apart they are. They're maybe a quarter inch.
Okay.
So they're fairly close together, and that gives that segmentation, though, that looks like the natural. And what you do now, once you have the eyes and the body tied in on the damsel, for instance, you'll take the thread through the body back to the bend of the hook and tie in the damsel body at the tail, which is essentially the base of the tail. You've got a little wider section and then a tail section. At the join between the wide part and the narrow part is where you'll tie it in at the bend of the hook and just fold that body over. Now you advance your thread again through the body up to the eyes and you tie down the body behind the eyes and in front of the eyes. Now one thing I have to mention is you need your body to come to a point to whip finish on the front of the fly, so you take the body that you've cut and point it before you use it.
Okay.
You give it just a pair of scissors. Just take a pair of scissors and make a diagonal cut on each side so that it'll tie down nicely in the front right over the eyes.
Yeah, I think the picture of the damsel we have on your page is pretty clear on what you've just described.
Yeah.
So I think that's good. We did have one question come in. Tom Marks, he was trying to clarify what we've been talking about. Primarily, we've been talking about adult damsels, and we'll talk more about nymphs here in a few minutes, but that's primarily what we've been talking about up to this point. Okay, so, and then anything else? Any other
let's
tips
go with on? Let's go with the dragonfly quickly. It's a little bit different.
Okay.
Similar, same hook, same eyes. The body that you tie in on a dragonfly, typically I use a material called Estaz, which is a French fly tying material. It's available from most of the major fly shops. And it's sparkly.
What is it again? Can you?
It's Estaz. Estaz.
Okay, there you go. Thanks.
You can look it up in Cabela's, Kaufman's, any of the major mail order supply places have it. Estaz has their own website. Source Marketing is the company that markets it.
Okay.
But the main thing is it's a sparkle chenille. It's got flashy highlights to it. And if you look at pictures of dragonflies, a lot of them have flashy bodies. They've got very dazzling-looking bodies. They've got a lot of metallic highlights on them. And you want something like that on the body to imitate the body of that dragonfly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll use blue Estaz for a blue dragonfly, red Estaz for a red one, green Estaz for a green one.
Okay.
And just match the body color.
All right.
And again, it's tied in the same way as the damsel. You tie the Estaz along the shank from behind the eyes to the bend of the hook, and then you wrap the Estaz back over and tie it down, forming a little bigger body, but dragonflies are bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very sparkly. And you'll go through the same thing with the dragonfly. You'll move the thread back to the bend. You'll tie in the dragonfly body, which you've cut out and pointed, and then you advance the thread through the Estaz to behind the eyes, tie down once behind the eyes, and then bring the thread forward in front of the eyes and put that point between the eyes and tie it down. We've actually...
That's like pretty simple to tie.
Yeah, we've actually put a stopwatch on me, with bodies prepared already, but not pointed. At the... Fly Tackle Dealer Show last year in Denver. They put a stopwatch on me, and I tied a damsel in 2 minutes and 17 seconds. You can tie damsels and dragons all day for, three minutes or less apiece.
Yeah.
Once you've got the bodies together.
Yeah, cut out. Yeah, good. Can you talk a bit, because we did have some questions coming in about nymphs. Do you have any favorite patterns there or your patterns that you could describe to us? I know we don't have a materials list or any...
Let's talk nymphs quickly. My favorite for nymph fishing is the damsel. The damsel lives in weeds. Now, the damsel is different than the dragon in that the damsel crawls up vegetation, usually in the water. If you've got reeds or bulrushes along the edge of a lake, the damsels will crawl right up that vegetation, and that's where they'll hatch. They'll shed their nymph skin, and the adult will emerge and dry its wings. Now, at that time, for instance, that's a wonderful time to fish adults, because every fish in the lake, when this is going on, will be lined up along that weed line with its mouth open, waiting for a puff of wind. Because a puff of wind blows one of these guys in, and it's dead meat for them. I've actually caught fish at that time that are sitting on that weed line with an adult, and you pick them up, and they've got blue, solid blue down their throat. They've got blue damsels spilling out of their gill covers, and they're still feeding. They're just a mass of blue. I've had a couple, I've got a couple of lakes where I'll actually keep a trout and autopsy it, because I like to eat it, and the other one is I like to see what's in the stomach. And I've counted 40, 50, 60 damsels in one of these fish. Now the damsel nymph is a slow swimmer. It's about an inch to an inch and a quarter long. One of the best ways to imitate it, for instance, you have to remember the emergence. The emergence, they'll be out in the weeds, and they head for the shore. When the damsels are emerging, one of the most effective strategies is to stand on the shore and cast, using either a sink tip line or an intermediate clear sinker. And retrieve your nymph, let it count down essentially to a specific depth, and you experiment with that. You try different countdowns until you get a fish. But a lot of times, you have to remember which way these things are going. They're coming towards the shore. The fish are going to be looking for them that direction. If you go out in a boat, throw it into the shore and fish it back, it's going the wrong way.
Okay.
You're not going to catch as many fish.
What about the flies itself?
The flies,
Or do you have your own variation there?
A very good thing to remember on damsel nymphs is some advice from Phil Rowley, a very well-known British Columbia fly tier fisherman. Yeah, and he says tie it any way you want as long as it's thin. And that's one problem I see with a lot of commercial damsel patterns. Damsels are very, very thin. They're an inch and a quarter long, but they're very thin. When I tie a damsel nymph, it's not much wider than the hook shank.
Okay. So tell us how you tie. Walk us through what you tie.
Okay, I can tell you specifically how I tie a damsel nymph. Again, I'll use a Dairiki 730. I'm using the same hook that I use for the adult. Now, typically on damsel nymph, I'll do a 10. Size 10, and I'll tie in a clump of marabou as a tail. Now, the tail is actually, you've got three paddle-shaped tails on a damsel nymph, and they're gills. But it's got three little tails, and you want that to imitate it. So I use a clump of marabou. Next, I'll tie in something for the back. Now, I've got a real good picture of a damsel nymph from last season that was crawled out, actually, on my pontoon boat. I took a picture of him. Put him on my hand, actually, and took a picture. He's on my finger. But the back is shiny. So you want a shiny material on the back of that damsel. You either want a piece of a Ziploc bag, or I use a piece of metallic twist ribbon, which is kind of an iridescent, almost like medallion sheeting material. I'll use a strip of that. And actually, that's the next step. I'll tie in the marabou tail. I tie in the backing, that strip of material, either plastic or ribbon, that I'm going to put over the back, and a wire rib.
Okay.
And what I'll do then is move to the front of the fly, tie in a pair of 2-millimeter eyes, black plastic B-chain eyes, and then I take a single strand of yarn. This is just olive yarn, stuff that you'd knit with. And I separate it. It's usually four strand, and I'll separate a single strand out, and I tie it down the length of the shank from the front to the back and clip it off. And What this does is it gives that body an even taper all the way along the body. You don't get a big clump where you've tied in thread at the tail. You can make a nice even body. And what I do then is I typically just dub olive dubbing right over it.
Coming from the back to the front.
Coming from the back to the front. And the next thing I'll do is I'll pull that either Ziploc plastic material or the ribbon over the body, tie it down at the front, behind the eyes, and then in front of the eyes. And then I bring the thread back behind the eyes, and I pull the rib up to that point and tie it in. And what I do at this point...
Pull the rib, you mean wind the rib, right?
I'll wind the rib.
Rib it, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
okay. Right. I'll rib that backing to make a shiny back on it. What I do at this point is I usually take the fly and turn it over in the vise. A damsel, when it swims, the water has legs, and it trails them underneath the body. So I want a throat, something green, right underneath the eye of the hook to imitate those legs. And what I usually take, I've got dyed olive pheasant phyllo plume, which is butt feathers off of a Chinese pheasant. You know, just the variety they have in the U.S. here that are dyed olive. And the base of that feather, they call it aftershaft or phyllo plume. It's the same type of a base that's on, for instance, if you have olive saddle that you tie woolly buggers with. The base of it is that fluffy stuff.
Right.
That's phyllo plume.
Okay.
And you've got a very well-developed bunch of it on those specific pheasant feathers. And actually, they've got patterns. If you look up on the Internet, if you Google it, you'll find aftershaft or phyllo plume damsel patterns that are entirely tied with that phyllo plume material dyed olive.
Okay.
It's similar to marabou.
Right.
But I take a little piece of that off of the phyllo plume base of the feather and wet the end and tie it in right under the eye. And that makes a nice little olive green throat to imitate the legs.
Okay. What color wire do you use for your rib?
Copper.
Copper, okay.
You could use gold, you could use silver, I don't think it makes any difference, but I use copper.
Okay. And that's it. Very thin profile, though, it sounds like. I'm just trying
very
to get it in
thin
my mind.
Profile.
Yeah.
It's not much wider than the shank of the hook.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just laugh sometimes when I see commercial damsel patterns. I know I tied up one of my favorite dragonfly patterns, actually, dragonfly nymphs. This model left John Barr's all-rounder dragonfly nymph. And I tied one up, and I showed it to John at one of the shows. And he said, "Oh, my damsel." And I looked at the Umpqua Feather Merchant's catalog, and John Barr's dragonfly nymph is Barr's damsel in their catalog. It's way too big to be a damsel. But it's his dragonfly pattern, and they accepted it as the Barr damsel, which is interesting.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a little break here, and then we got to come right back and talk about strategy and presentation. So bear with me for just a minute. At Housatonic River Outfitters, we offer the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with our guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, we offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing guide trips for warm water species as well. Please tour our website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services we offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. We are the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services, and we have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rich Palatsky about fishing lakes with damsels and dragons. If you'd like to ask a question, just go to our homepage, type in the question in the Q&A box, and we'll receive it immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as we can on the show tonight. Okay, Rich, we've covered the tying of the nymphs and the, and again, just a quick reminder on the nymphs, I assume that We're going to go out to the lake and look what color the weeds are to determine what those damselfly nymphs are. What
that
color
should be the correct color. One strategy that I've just started using, I used it this past season several times and had some success with it, is to fish a nymph on a trailer on an adult damsel. Damsel nymph is a dropper off of that adult. What I found is the fish generally will take the nymph. But okay. It's quite a kick when your damsel just takes off like it's water skiing when they plow into that nymph. And It's an interesting strategy. We should quickly mention dragonfly nymphs also. Okay. Dragonfly nymphs, there are two types of dragonflies. There's two general types, the gomphidae or the burrowers, which are commonly called clubtails. And they dig into the substrate. They burrow, actually. And then there's the Aeshnidae, the green darners, which are free swimmers and live in weeds. And for my purposes on fishing dragonflies, I only fish Aeshnidae imitations, the free swimmers. They're very good swimmers. They swim much faster. In fact, they can jet water through their abdomen like a little outboard motor. They can move very fast in spurts when they want to. You fish them actually a lot faster than you would a damsel. A damsel is a slow, clumsy swimmer. The Aeshnidae are very good swimmers, and they can really spurt. They can really move. But they're also a lot bigger. Those are the ones that can be 3 inches or more. They're very green, matching the vegetation usually, because they are living in weeds. And they're kind of the predator of the weed beds. The gomphidae, the burrowers, burrow into the substrate or live in subsurface debris. They'll live around trees and fallen timber and things like that. And they'll generally match the color of the substrate or the debris that they live in.
Okay.
So a lot of them are brown.
Yeah. Okay.
And the Aeshnidae are typically living in weeds. Most of them are green.
Okay.
So there is a basic color difference usually between those two families of dragonflies. And the gomphidae is flat-bodied. The Aeshnidae is cylindrical.
Okay. We're running out of time here, so I really want to address some of these presentation issues that people are asking about. You'd already mentioned using an intermediate or sinking tip line to fish the nymphs.
Right.
You also talked about fishing those slowly up towards the shore, because that's the way they're moving. Okay. Any other tips about that?
We might mention the typically with a sink tip line, I might use a 6 foot leader. With a clear intermediate, I use a 3.5 to 4 foot leader.
Okay,
a little shorter.
Much. Yeah.
And typically, I'll have them tapered to maybe a 3x or 2x on the damsel, and on the dragonfly nymph, it'll be a 2x or a 1x.
Okay.
You can fish them on pretty stout tippets.
Let's
talk quickly about the presentation of the adults, though.
So, yes. Yeah,
both of those you fish on floating lines. Typically fish them on about an 8 or 9 foot leader that's tapered down to a 2X. Now, when I first started, I tried 4X, and when you've got big fish and weeds combined, 4X isn't going to do it. What I have found is that the fish are not leader shy at all. They'll take a 2X very readily, at least the fish that I'm catching here. What they are is they're line shy. If you put a false cast over a fish's head when he's looking for damsels and dragons, he's gone. That fish will stop feeding and retreat. They're very wary overhead. They've got a lot of threats from the air, including things like pelicans and kingfishers and seagulls and God knows what else. But actually, this is something that Dan Wright noticed when he was photographing me fishing damsels one day. Is he said that if I lined a fish, they stopped feeding. They were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason that you want to be careful with your false cast on a cast to a feeding fish when they're going after damsels or dragons. You want to kind of false cast at right angles and then lay out at right angles to your false cast and put it right on the fish's nose without going over him.
Okay. And what's your retrieve like?
I don't retrieve at all. I let it sit. I might give it one twitch when it lands. That's about the most action that you'll ever do.
Okay. Because, and then you'll just pick it up and cast again.
I'll pick
out
it up
again.
And cast again, yeah.
Because that, and this may relate to it, but George in Boise, Idaho, put in a question here. How do you prevent the wings on the adults from folding back when false casting? Are they reinforced to stay at 90 degrees? So I'm wondering, too, about this picking up and laying down again.
Well, my wings do fold back. What I do when I fish it, and that's the reason it casts well. My fly with macrame wings doesn't helicopter, doesn't twist the leader, casts well, lays down nicely on the water. Now, it actually probably sits at about a 45-degree angle, but the thing is that it doesn't have to be at right angles to the body. You know, especially newly hatched cripples are all over the place with their wings.
Okay.
They aren't at right angles. You know. One thing that I do, though, on that macrame wing is I put floating on the wing.
All right.
On that.
Just on the wing and not the body.
On the wing. And the thing is that when you throw it out, you'll see white. That wing sticks up. And when the white disappears, generally I tighten up the line because most of the time a fish has it.
Good tip. Let's see. We have a question. Bill Jones, Deer Lodge, Montana. Hi, Rich. The lake I fish is a fantastic damsel hatch. Unfortunately, it's also pretty weedy by that time of year. When I use heavier tippets to keep from breaking off in weeds, I get a lot of refusals or my fly is just ignored. Do you have any tips or techniques that will help me with hookups on leader shy trout in weedy water?
Again, what I've seen is the fish are not leader shy. They're line shy. He may be spooking them with his cast. I fish a 2X tippet all the time, and I'll get an occasional refusal, but hardly any.
Okay.
You know, I'll get three or four hookups for every refusal.
And I suppose from what you said, I would imagine that if they're on the feed for adult damsels, then they are paying attention to the surface rather than at other times when they might not be and be less spooky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
they're also in, a lot of times, up close to the surface. They're very close, and that's why they're so line shy. Is, if they see anything overhead, they're gone. You know, a lot of times, when you're fishing adult damsels and dragons, you're fishing to, fish that are feeding. You're seeing rises, or you're even seeing noisy water. You'll see the wake that they leave when they swim. And you'll actually see the fish moving through the water. By his wake, right under the surface.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What they call noisy wake. Water and salt water. But when they swim, they leave a little wake and some disturbance.
How long do you leave it out there, you know, when you're fishing the adults and you're letting it sit, twitch a bit?
Not more than probably a minute or two. And I'll be looking all the time. And
noisy water or something. Yeah,
you look for other rises, active fish. You know, if you see a better spot to put it, you put it there. If there isn't a better spot, you may leave it there for a minute or two. You know, you don't leave it for, you know, 5 minutes even. A couple of minutes is the most you'd leave it at any one time. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, we've had several people call in from Massachusetts or put up questions from Massachusetts. There's a great website, and I sent this to you as a link, called Massachusetts Dragonflies by Glenn Corbier, and wonderful pictures of dragonflies. Great-looking dragonfly pictures from the state of Massachusetts. I wanted to mention it because it's a great place to look at some of these critters and see what they look like, and damsels also are on there.
Yeah, and we do have a link to that site, Rich,
yeah.
on your page, so people can go there directly and check that out. Yeah, some great photography there. Any other comments on? It seems pretty simple as far as the presentation goes. No tricks involved, really.
It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
Actually, too, what's interesting on the tying of these patterns. I was out last weekend at the Western Colorado Fly Tying Expo in Grand Junction, and they have a fly plate every year. With flies that the tires at the previous expo tied. And there was a dragonfly, and there's my pattern. I taught a 5-year-old boy out there named Orion Olton, and he tied a damselfly and put it in the case. And it's a great-looking damsel. Uh-huh. Or no, it wasn't a damsel, it was a dragon. Big one. But macrame wings, everything. But he's only 5 years old. And if he can tie it, then I think I can teach just about anybody that's got fingers.
Yeah. We have a question here from Bob in Frazeesburg, Ohio again. He wants to know if you tie these flies smaller for the eastern ponds and streams. Doesn't the company that makes the cutters, they have those in different sizes, right?
Yeah, the cutters are three different sizes. You know, the smallest one is what I use for the damsel, and about a hook size 12. The medium one is a hook size 10, and the large one is a hook size 8. That's what I use for the dragon. So the intermediate size I can use for a large damsel or a small dragon.
Yeah. We've got a question here from Rick Pasek in British Columbia, Canada. And he says he's an author, guide, and instructor up in B.C. His question for you, and I assume he's talking about...
Nymphs.
I guess he could, nymphs, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he's talking about what's most important, color, habitat, retrieve speed, depth, or size? How would you address that?
Which is most important?
Yeah.
Well, color is certainly important because it has to match the color of the habitat, you know, whether it's a gomphety or an Aishnidae, a burrower or a swimmer. Mm-hmm. Habitat, you know, if you're not fishing in the habitat, you're wasting your time because that's where they live. That's where they're going
to
be.
Retrieve
speed, again, different for the different dragonflies. Gomphety are not very fast. They typically live in debris or in the bottom. They're very hard to fish. Their imitation, unless it's hatching. When it's hatching, it'll swim towards the shore, and you'll get some times in. But if it's not hatching, it's burrowed.
Yeah.
And it's hard to fish a gomphety imitation. The free swimmers are a lot easier to fish. Now, depth, obviously depth is going to make a difference because they live in weeds. You know, 80-foot water, you're not going to have weeds.
Right.
You know, 5-10-foot water, you're going to have weeds. And then size. Size, obviously, what I always go with on something like nymphs is same thing I do with ants. What's the biggest size? And that's the size I fish.
Yeah.
And that would be, in the case of dragons, I'd fish four in the spring. Now, once the hatch has occurred during the year, when I fish in the fall, again, I fish dragonfly nymphs before the weeds grow up and after the lakes turn over, after weeds die down starting in October in the Rocky Mountains. But in the fall, I'll fish an eight, simply because that's the biggest size that's around.
Okay, well, we've run out of time here, Rich. We're going to have to tie things up here, no pun intended, and finish up. But I noticed a message came in here at the end, and it's from Don Bishop. He says, great show. Tell Rich that he's convinced. So I think he'll be back out there with his damsels and dragons and be pounding the water in Montana. So lucky guy, lives right up there by in Belgrade, right next to Bozeman, so he's in some prime territory there. So.
Yes, he is. Actually, there was another question on the website on whether I was going to be tying damsels and dragons at the conclave this year, at the FFF conclave in Whitefish, and I am.
Okay, good. Well, then, folks, you can see him there if you'd like to see him tie. There was another question from Ron in Australia, since he said he probably won't ever get to see you tie, and he was asking about books and DVDs, if you had any recommendations on that. But hopefully
I'd go with something from the B.C. area. Phil Rowley and Brian Chan probably have the best summaries.
Also on the some good drawings and life cycle things is Dave Whitlock, who's going to be on our show in May. His Guide to Aquatic Trout Foods has
Yeah, Dave's book on that is excellent.
Yeah, so those might be things that Ron can look at as well. So, well, let's we got to move along. We got to do a drawing here, a couple drawings, and so let me take one more break, and we'll get right to that. Stick around, folks, and see if you win these drawings. Pere Marquette River Lodge, a full-service Orvis-endorsed lodge, fly shop and guide service, located on the banks of historic Pere Marquette River in Baldwin, Michigan, provides year-round lodging for the business or pleasure traveler, as well as a full-service fly shop and guided trips for steelhead, salmon, or large resident brown trout. For more information, visit their website at www.pm, as in Pere Marquette, pmlodge.com, or call 231-745-3972. That's 231-745-3972. Well, just a quick reminder to everyone, if you have a minute, you leave the show tonight, please leave us your comments in the feedback section right under Rich's section. It says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. We'd like to know what you have to say. And again, thanks everyone for submitting your questions tonight. We didn't get to all of them, but we really appreciate it. It makes the show much more interesting. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our database, which comes from the registration on our website. Now, if you didn't register already, it's still too late now, but make sure you do it for the next show, because you don't want to miss out on all the incredible prizes that we give out every couple weeks. Now, if you're the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with the information on how to receive your gift. So, we will be giving away, first, a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. If you want to learn more about the FFF, just go to fedflyfishers.org. That's Fed, F-E-D, flyfishers.org. It's a great organization to support, and, of course, it'll be a great prize to win tonight. Now, we're going to do our drawing from our database here, and we'll pick our winner. And our first winner is Joe Rilio in New York. Joe Rilio in New York. Well, congratulations, Joe. I'm sure there's some dragons out there and damsels, and I'm sure you'll enjoy your membership here to the FFF. And then our second drawing is for 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, which is out of Calgary, Canada. Their website is flyfusionmag.com. That's flyfusionmag.com. So this is for 1-year subscription to that, and our winner is Jim Coates in New Hampshire. Jim Coates. So hopefully you'll enjoy that, Jim. Again, a great magazine to read. All right. Now, the final thing is we're going to do our question and answer, and you need to type in a text box at the on our homepage. So you need to put in the answer to the question, and you need to put in your name and your location as well to qualify. And Rich is going to help me out on determining whether or not you've answered the question we have for you tonight. Now, I always make these really hard, so smile, jest there, not. But it really has to do with a little bit of quick fingers here as well. Actually, I hope I asked this question right, and tell me if I don't, Rich, okay?
Okay.
Either the dragon or the damselflies, one of them is a burrower. Which one is the burrower? Is that correct, Rich?
Yes, one of them has a group that burrows in the substrate.
Okay, which one, dragonfly or damsel? Dragonfly or damsel. First one wins, and you get a dozen of Rich's flies, 6 damsels, and 6 dragons, hand-tied by Rich. What more could you guys want? They're slow on the finger tonight, Rich. I'm telling you. Okay, we got Justin is the first one in State College, Pennsylvania. He says dragonfly.
Bingo!
Wow, first guy wins. Well, congratulations, yep. Justin. You just won a dozen flies right from Rich, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy those. So, Justin, please send in your email address in the same way you just did so that I can email you and get your contact information. So do that or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com, info@askaboutflyfishing.com. So congratulations, Justin. Well, Rich, hey, we really appreciate you being with us tonight and talking with us and sharing your knowledge. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I've talked with you at the shows and always enjoyed it, and tonight was no different. So thank you very much for being on our show.
Well, I enjoyed it, too. The questions were very good, very insightful. I didn't know what to expect, really, from the questions, but they were very good questions. They were logical questions, showed that people were really thinking about the subject.
Yeah, and it's always fun because we get people from all over the world asking and a little different perspective, so always makes it a bit more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thanks, and I want to tell people about our next show here, but we'll see you at probably the next show in Denver here, Rich.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Our next broadcast will be on April 16th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we will interview Marty Bartholomew, and our topic for the show will be high country fly fishing. And we're talking about backpacking here and hiking in to get to these lakes. Marty has hiked and backpacked into many high mountain lakes and streams and discovered that it requires a few different skills and techniques to master fly fishing for trout at altitude. So listen in and hear Marty share what he's learned. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Royal Gorge Anglers, Front Range Anglers, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Paramarquette River Lodge for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company might benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115. That's 888-961-1115, extension 2, and ask for Tim Emery. Tim Emery, and he'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.